God, may the words of my mouth and the meditation of all of our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, my strength and my redeemer. Amen. Those poor leaders of the synagogue, they always incite Jesus' wrath when all they were trying to do was follow the rules. I bet this leader in particular was an ESTJ on the Myers-Briggs, and he really thought he was helping the whole room by pointing out that Jesus could have simply waited to heal the woman after the Sabbath. Then there would have been no issue. It's really not that hard. Wait, no issue. But once again, Jesus insisted on healing the woman in the middle of the day of rest. What would have been the harm if Jesus had waited 24 hours to heal the woman? It would have been less than 24 hours if we think about it. The day was already half over. Clearly, the woman could have waited 12 more hours. She had waited 18 years. Really, what's another 12 hours? Another 12 hours, Jesus teaches us in verse 15, is hypocritical injustice. Jesus points out to the leaders of the synagogue and to everyone there that untying their animals is work, when one follows the strict definitions of such a thing in the Talmud. Thus, Jesus is showing us that we are only striving to be rule followers when the inconvenience of following the rules does not affect us. In the case of the crippled woman, this inconvenience is more than that. It's pain and hopelessness and despair. Refusing to heal the crippled woman would have been God's rejection of her own faith. Refusing to heal the crippled woman would have meant that God chose to withhold justice and grace. This morning, when we listened to the letter to the Hebrews, we heard a reminder of the seeming differences between the God of the Old Testament and the God of the New Testament. In the Old Testament, we encounter a God who smites people. A God who, when the smiting doesn't seem to work out, wipes out the entire population of the world in a flood. A God who appears at Sinai to meet Moses and whose voice is so terrible that the Israelites fear they might die if they have to listen to it much longer. By contrast, we seem to think that the God of the New Testament is happy to skip arm in arm with us through the trials and tribulations of life. God laughs like a jolly grandmother when we do something wrong, shaking her head and giving us a tut-tut with her tongue. Our buddy Jesus tells these confusing stories full of anecdotes meant to set us on the right path. And sure, Jesus sometimes gets crabby and yells at people or flips tables over, but he's just a man after all, so we can tell him to relax and everything will be just fine. Somehow we seem to have forgotten Jeremiah's God, who touches our lips and gives us the words to speak when nothing else seems able to. We've forgotten the God who is that still small voice who whispers to us through the start of creation and through all of those Old Testament moments that build us up for the coming of Christ. Just as the author of the letter to the Hebrews resolves, we are reminded in our gospel lesson from this morning that the disparity between the Old Testament God and the New Testament God does not exist. God is one, though the delivery of the message varies from situation to situation. God sent Jesus and through him made a new covenant with the people that replaced the bonds of the old covenant. God is in the business of making covenants. God covenanted with Jacob when he renamed him Israel and promised his family would be a great nation. God covenanted with Noah after the flood. God covenanted with Moses and the Israelites at Sinai. And God covenanted with the whole world when he sent his only begotten Son. God got out of the business of justice from afar when God saw that we were still not getting the picture. God sent his Son to show us in flesh and blood what justice and grace look like, what they feel like when they physically touch us. Yet even in person, we sometimes miss the message, just like the leaders did at the temple that day. The woman had waited 18 years already. So what's another 12 hours? 50 years ago this week, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. stood before 250,000 people on the National Mall and delivered his most famous address. In that speech, he called for justice that was long overdue, justice that he and other Black Americans were told to wait for, not to push too hard or to ruffle too many feathers. It will happen eventually if you're just patient. Wait just a little bit longer. Dr. King began, 50 years ago, a great American in whose symbolic shadow we stand signed the Emancipation Proclamation. This momentous decree came as a great beacon light of hope to millions of Negro slaves who had been seared in the flames of withering injustice. It came as a joyous daybreak to end the long night of captivity. But 100 years later, we must face the tragic fact that the Negro is still not free. 100 years later, the life of the Negro is still sadly crippled by the manacles of segregation and the chains of discrimination. 100 years later, the Negro lives on a lonely island of poverty in the midst of a vast ocean of material prosperity. 100 years later, the Negro is still languishing in the corners of American society and finds himself in exile in his own land. So we have come here today to dramatize an appalling condition. He continued in that speech towards the iconic climax and from which we take the title. Dr. King told us to go back to our homes knowing that somehow the situation could and would be changed. He told us not to wallow in the valley of despair, continuing by saying, "I say to you today, my friends, that in spite of the difficulties and frustrations of the moment, I still have a dream. It is a dream deeply rooted in the American dream. I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal." Dr. King had a dream, and that dream lives on, but we aren't there yet. 150 years after the signing of the Emancipation Proclamation, we aren't there yet. It would be incredibly easy for us to sit here in Winchester, Massachusetts, and pretend that this dream has been realized. It would be easy for us to go through life with our blinders on, refusing to see the discrepancies all around us. It would be easy for us to blame the oppressed for their oppression. And in many ways, we do this every day. We are participants in a systemic injustice simply by living in the systems all around us. Black or African American people are more likely to live in poverty, experience a lower quality education because of where they live, which leads to fewer employment opportunities, which means that many of these brothers and sisters of ours make substantially less than their Caucasian peers, and therefore are able to afford fewer educational opportunities for their children, which simply perpetuates the cycle of poverty. In addition, those who are higher on the economic ladder still make less than their white peers, simply because of the color of their skin. Minorities in America are more likely to experience gun violence firsthand because of their place in the poverty cycle. Those factors lead to wealthy Americans, often white Americans, to accept racism as a part of the system, sometimes without even noticing that it is there. We blame poverty. We blame government programs. We blame crime. We blame many things that are easier to say than the frightening word and concept that is racism. This system of injustice is a major reason that George Fuentes, a young man on the verge of getting out of the cycle that he grew up in, was killed on his neighbor's front porch. It is why a dark-skinned teenager can be followed home from a store, shot by a light-skinned man who directly defied police orders by following the teen, yet is released as not guilty because of a law that allows people to kill others they deem a threat. As many have speculated since the outcome of the Trayvon Martin case, if George Zimmerman were black and Trayvon Martin were a white teenager walking home, do we really believe the outcome of the case would have been the same? Dr. King's dream lives on and can still become reality when those who are in power, those who are in higher income brackets, and those whose skin color matches that of those who are in power and who have been the oppressors in the past, when they choose to partner with the poor, with the minorities, and those who strive for justice so that our common call can be for justice and equality to roll down like waters, and righteousness like an ever-flowing stream. Jesus knew this dream and worked towards its realization thousands of years before Dr. King ascended the steps of the Lincoln Memorial. Jesus came to this earth to fight for justice for the crippled woman in our text from this morning, to fight for the hungry, for the poor, for the disenfranchised, and for all people, because God desires justice to be extended and to be experienced by all, because we are all created in God's image. When Jesus healed that woman on the Sabbath, he broke the manacles that had bound her for 18 long years. Jesus deemed she had suffered long enough and shouldn't have to suffer any longer. When will we take up Jesus' call to be his disciples in this world and to work for justice that has been denied far longer than a mere 18 years? Last week, when we were at El Hogar with the teenagers, we witnessed radical incidences of injustice. We traveled to a place where it is normal for children to go to bed hungry, for gunshots to ring out in the night, for families to starve, and for education to be a privilege rather than an expectation. In the midst of all of that, we strived to see how our hands and our hearts could be of use, how we could make a difference in such a big problem. But something that's so important for us to remember is that we do not have to travel halfway across the world to encounter such problems and to make a difference right now, today. To close the reflection time for the group one evening, Jason, one of our adult leaders, introduced the teens to a famous prayer by Teresa of Avila, a 16th century mystic. Christ has no body but yours, no hands, no feet on earth but yours. Yours are the eyes with which he looks compassion on this world. Yours are the feet with which he walks to do good. Yours are the hands with which he blesses all the world. Yours are the hands Yours are the feet. Yours are the eyes. You are his body. Christ has no body but yours. No hands, no feet on earth but yours. Yours are the eyes with which he looks compassion on this world. Christ has no body now on earth but yours. May we all remember that Christ came to earth to save us from ourselves and to bring justice to the weak. That mission can only be achieved when we realize that we are Christ's instruments in this world, and ensuring justice and equality is all of our responsibility. 18 years, 18 minutes, 18 seconds. Hasn't it been long enough? Amen.